up in Maine. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, the tenement halls, whispering sounds of silence.
Those are the Simon and Garfunkel fellas with The Sounds of Silence. On your radio, friend, it's 14 minutes until 11 o'clock on your Thank God It's Friday Morning. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, Glenn Klein, and he is Stephen Hecht, the president and chief executive peacemaker of A Million Peacemaker. He's also the winner of numerous awards, international, national business and community awards, and is a leader in YPO. With over 30 years in private and public business, divorce, remarriage, kids, and stepkids, Stephen has experienced many conflicts and shares some of the lessons he learned right now on WRJM. Please welcome back Mr. Stephen Hecht. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
I have no complaints, but thank you for caring enough to ask. How are you?
Awesome, thanks.
Where are you this morning?
I'm in my condo right now in Montreal. And we're just very, very busy preparing for 31 people for dinner tonight.
It happens to be Passover. Would that have anything to do with it?
It is. It's the first night of Passover. We're having the first Seder over here. And everything has to be from scratch. My wife is very old-fashioned when it comes to that. And from the horseradish to the gefilte fish, and the everything is being done from scratch. So we've been a busy household from 2 days ago. We started with the cooking of the soup.
You've got to make charoses from scratch no matter what. That's automatic.
Yes. Yes. Actually, my stepson Elliot made that last night.
If you ladies and gentlemen have never been to a Passover Seder, you got to go at some point. I don't care how religious, non-religious, unbeliever, believer. It is just a phenomenal family tradition. Did you hear our promotion with Senator Feingold about his Passover? I asked him if their Passover Seder table was a political free zone. And he was like, no way. But he said that's not what the holiday is about, which is true, of course. But it was a cute bit with the former and perhaps future senator from the great state of Wisconsin. One of the things that happens, Stephen, when families get together is there often is serious conflict. How do you apply conflict to family gatherings like you're going to be having tomorrow night?
It's a great question. The holidays tend to bring out the best and the worst in families. And we have our share of our own conflicts within our family, and some from the prior generation never got resolved, unfortunately. So we try to actually deal with the conflict before we actually come to the dinner table, so that by the time we're together, there is more harmony than conflict, because in front of, you know, 20 other people, you really don't want to get into an explosion. So we actually try get together to understand each other face-to-face and deal with conflict using our conflict methodology. And in fact, we had one of those episodes in our own family that got resolved 2 days ago.
Share to care? I mean care to share?
Well, it wasn't between me, it was actually between my brother and my mother. And I don't know if I could get into great details, but there was misunderstanding with my brother's daughter, my niece, and my mother. And there was just a major conflict. They weren't talking to each other. So in anticipation of being together at the dinner table tonight, we actually went through the conflict way with them. And they got it resolved, and everyone is happy again.
He is the co-author of The Conflict Way, Conflict, The Art of Everyday Peacemaking, as well as Dr. Amir Kafir. And just for the beautiful humans out there, Stephen, that don't know your background, just give them a brief synopsis of what you went through and what you're doing now.
Briefly, I had about 30 years in different family businesses. I was third generation in the family business that I grew into when I graduated from my MBA. And I had lost an uncle of mine who was a mentor when I was second year university, and that created a fair amount of conflict between my uncles and myself. There was a bit of jealousy going on in terms of me eventually being able to, with my father, have control of our business. So that created a fair amount of conflict as well. I was dealing with the loss of, the emotional loss of an uncle who was very close to me. So I had a fair amount of pressure there. Later on, you know, I've experienced, you know, in the growth of our business, union strikes, having to let go a number of people during hard times, family conflict within my with my siblings as well as my parents. From a personal perspective, I got married to an American who had spent some time, by the way, in Eagle River. She mentioned me. I was actually talking to her the other day that she went to the camp. I think there was a girls' camp in Eagle River, Marometta, and her brother went to Menominee, which is
really
a camp. Yeah.
Marometta was our sister camp, and I own Menominee. What is their names?
Jan, her sister and she are Jan and Elizabeth Blair, and her brother is Larry Blair.
Larry Blair.
I think they went before. They're in their late 50s, and I think they mentioned the Wassermans were the owners.
The Wassermans were the owners when I went to camp there as a boy. Larry Blair might have been before my time. I started in 69.
So it would have been well before then, I think. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably around 60 now. I'm not quite sure exactly. So, by the way, it's nice that we're, as parenting, still talking and collaborating with each other. And I think conflict went a long way in doing that, because there was a fair amount of conflict I had with my ex-wife as well over the years. And a lot of it, we talk about conflict due to misunderstanding and just not having the tools to resolve it. So due to all these conflicts that I had in my life, I was motivated to learn more to resolve conflicts more effectively. And that's when, through an event I was planning on conflict resolution with the Young Presidents Organization, I was introduced to Dr. Amir Kafir. And Dr. Kafir had a lot of practical experience bringing together conflicting parties who really had major identity-based conflicts. So we're talking Israelis and Arabs and Greeks and Turks. So these are the toughest conflicts, and he was really wonderful in bringing together these parties. So I asked him if he could help to do this event that we were going to take across Canada and then ideally the world. And that's what we did. Amir was able to figure out how to put the essence of resolving any conflict, the steps of that, on the back of a business card that people could carry around with them. And that's what we called the Conflict Way. And we did this across Canada with about 700 CEOs and their families, and young adult children and their spouses. And people were able to resolve conflicts right there on the spot that they might have had for years and years. I had a psychiatrist resolve a conflict that she had with her mother-in-law to the point where she wasn't allowing her mother-in-law to see the mother-in-law's grandchildren, her children, anymore, because she thought the relationship was toxic, and it got resolved right then and there.
Maybe you could talk to my former mother-in-law.
Happy to do so. I've had a bunch of mother-in-laws myself.
The book is called Conflict. They actually literally made up a new word. It's the opposite of conflict. It's Conflict, the art of everyday peacemaking. He's a co-author, Stephen Hecht, along with Amir Kafir. And I want to read a section, Stephen, because I think it's so instructive. And it's a beautiful story, very, very, it's a teachable moment. So Professor Aaron Kafir is Amir's father, and he helped shape Israel's public administration. And he told Amir and Stephen the following story. In 1870, a French soldier in Germany was taken as a prisoner of war. In the prison camp, it was extremely hard to survive, but the soldier believed that there was a beautiful girl waiting for him at home. This gave him the hope he needed to keep going. During his time in the camp, he had one friend with whom he shared his secret. By the end of the war, he and his friend had managed to survive. When they left on their respective journeys back home, his friend worried that the Frenchman might return home to find the girl with someone else. His friend decided to write a telegram to the girl to warn her that the Frenchman was coming home. Meanwhile, the Frenchman's girl had been faithful and waiting for him the entire time. She received the telegram and started to clean the house and prepare dinner for the Frenchman. When the Frenchman arrived at the house, he looked through the window and saw the table was set for two with flowers and wine. Assuming the table was set for someone else, The Frenchman was overwhelmed with grief. He leapt into a nearby river, killing himself. The next day, when the Frenchman's body was discovered, the girl, too, was so overtaken by grief, she ended her life the very same way. What does this story teach us, other than tragedy happens?
Well, the story teaches us to really understand the essence of what's going on, rather than to assume what might be going on. So in this case, the Frenchman just assumed that his girlfriend was with someone else. And often we misunderstand and we assume things which aren't accurate. I can't tell you how many conflicts I have when my wife says something and I assume she's criticizing me or means something else, and I get angry. In this case, it was a much more tragic situation. So it teaches us to really look at what the underlying problem is rather than to just look and assume that we understand what it is.
Have you ever heard the principle of seeking first to understand in order to be understood?
Yes, it's really at the essence of what Nonflict Way is, which is to understand ourselves, then to understand the other. And most of the conflicts we have are because we don't really understand what the underlying conflict is. We're dealing just with the symptoms, and we make assumptions, which in this case of the Frenchman are fatal.
Everybody wants their opinions heard and solicited. Everybody has an opinion. And when you approach somebody asking them their position, before you give yours, you're literally preparing them to hear what you have to say. It's a beautiful, it is the most powerful communication strategy I have ever learned or taught myself.
You're so right. We do an exercise when we do the training, and we talk about it in the book as one of the exercises, where we make eye contact with the other, so it shows that we're listening to them. We're not looking down at our smartphone or anything else. We make gentle eye contact, and we ask them to tell us a story about an event that had a major impact in their life and why, or a person that had a major impact in their life and why. So this is a positive emotional story. And then we listen to them and repeat back the essence of what we heard. And when they see that we're actually listening to them and understanding them, you can see the energy go way up in the room and the body language, people get closer to each other. So it's really, really powerful when people feel listened to, they feel validated, and then they're willing to listen to your side of the story.
He is co-author Stephen Hecht. The book is Nonflict, The Art of Everyday Peacemaking. He is also the president and chief executive peacemaker of A Million Peacemakers. How many you got so far?
We've got about 130,000.
On your way to a mill?
Yep.
How do you join?
All you do is you read the book, or you come online and you say you'd like to learn more. And you join, you can become a peacemaker. And the idea is, after you learn the Nonflict Way, you just keep it with you, either on a card, or you can take a picture of it from our website, millionpeacemakers.org, and keep it around with you, and you apply it. So anyone could be a peacemaker. I'm hoping that everyone becomes a peacemaker.
No doubt. Well, you have 130,001. I'm joining up right now.
Oh, you're most welcome. Congratulations.
Thank you, and congratulations to Stephen Hecht. He's in Montreal this morning getting ready for Pesach. It's night number one tonight. So how do you say, why is this night different from all other nights in French?
Pourquoi cette nuit est différente que toutes les autres nuits?
Très bien. Thanks so much for doing it. Have a great... Just tell the beautiful humans really quick. If you've never had gefilte fish, ladies and gentlemen, tell the folks, Stephen, what you guys are doing with your gefilte fish for tonight.
Okay, well, I'm doing it a little untraditional. First time, we're making smoked and fresh salmon gefilte fish versus pike. So we grate carrots and leeks and onions, and you put it all together with some matzah, which is crushed matzah. You know what that is, the cracker. It's called matzah cake, with some egg, and you put it all into a mixture, and then you boil it. Or fry it. We're boiling it for about 20 minutes, and that's how we make it. And then you could have it either with horseradish, or in the case of the salmon one, we're going to be doing it with a mayonnaise, a herbed mayonnaise.
Well, happy Passover, Shabbat Shalom, and you may be very hungry now. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Happy Passover to you.
Your radio friend is AM 1400 WRJN, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee. a Magnum.media station.
Here, thank God it's Friday. Hour of Power follows WRJN covering the news at 11 o'clock.
Cause of death, Ohio massacre. I'm Michael Toscano. The Carver County, Minnesota Sheriff will hold a news conference later.